Okay. Okay, Joanne has a couple of announcements she needs to make before we get started regarding logistical matters.
So, just so you absolutely know, Tim, our gentleman from Friends Meeting House, has made it clear about no drinks, no food in this room at any point. So if you have drinks in your bag, please don't drink them, and hopefully you don't. And also, if you begin to move a chair, please do not drag that chair. This is a bamboo, I believe, floor. So we must lift the chairs. If you're moving them, please lift them. We don't want anything to occur to the floor. So those two notes.
Thank you. If you could just, if you remember each meeting,
we'll get used to it then. Yeah, we'll get used to it.
It actually happens, but if you could remember that, well, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know if you have enough light that you can see this handout. Did everybody get the handout that Barb Fata so kindly put together for us? But just to take, well, there are a number of handouts. We have flyers, we have handouts. Barb, basically, pulled out the excerpts from the lecture and has outlined the lecture for you. So I want us to all take just a minute and read through those excerpts. If you haven't read the lecture, it will get you here and orient you. And if you have read the lecture, it will reinforce what you've read. So let's just take a minute, and if you can see, it's hard, but let's read the handouts just silently. Couple of quick announcements, and I hate announcements, so I promise you I will really streamline them, is I want to introduce to you our new Pittsburgh Pathwork Board of Directors, just by first name. Joanne Gatho is our board president, Billy Weil, Kim Fitzpatrick, where's Kim? Kay Kamini. Barb Fata. Where's Barb? Okay, she is. I couldn't see her. Okay. Pam Grove. Judy Kuchenmeister. Barbara Jean Nagrit. And Wilhelmina Oakley. So these are the people to see if you would like to participate more. Volunteer, be a part of projects, grab one of these people, give them your name, and let them know that you would like to become more involved. And thank all of you for serving us. Our logistical team from the board handled logistics tonight for the first time. I'm used to handling all of these things, so we're on a learning curve. We ended up without our name tags. Next time we'll have it all handled. And I'm learning how to let go. So I wanted to tell you about meditation class. We'll begin the end of the month. Again, it will be at Joanne's house. Joanne, do you have that date?
It's
27th? Okay. The 27th at Joanne's house. All the information is on the website for the meditation classes. And the other thing you have in your hand, hopefully, is we are doing a fundraiser for Pittsburgh Pathwork Saturday, November the 23rd, at First Methodist Church, which is right in the heart of Shadyside in their chapel. It will be an all-day workshop. We've named the workshop Strange Blessings. And what we mean by that is that many of the things that Ordinarily, people out in the world, including us, think our problems and travails and things that should not be happening. From the pathwork perspective, we consider all of those things filled with some potential gift and gold. So it will be a day of talking about strange blessings. We hope that you will all come. Donation is requested that will go to Pathwork to spread the word in the Pittsburgh community. $50 is requested. You're welcome to give more if you'd like to have a tax deduction at the end of the year. We hope to have that possibility worked out for you. If that is prohibitive in any way, give what you feel like you can give. And you are welcome, and you're certainly welcome to bring guests. We will try to address the principles in a way that they are understandable for new people as well as people who have experience. So it will be a day to gather, to celebrate Pathwork, and to do some outreach, draw other people in who might be interested in what we do, resonate with this work, and an opportunity to raise money for Pittsburgh Pathwork. So hope you all can attend that. Do we have any newcomers here tonight? If you feel comfortable raising your hand, someone who you haven't been here before? Great. Okay. Would you want to tell us your name?
I knew that was
coming. Yeah. It's going to get worse.
My name is Darren Stroud of Dormont, and I'm with Jim.
Thanks for coming. Is it Darren?
Darren, yes.
Darren, welcome. And?
I'm Kim Hoffman.
Hi, Kim. Welcome. Anybody else?
Yes.
Mike?
No, I'm with Barb.
Mike? I'm with Barb. I'm not new. Welcome, though. We're glad to have you. Anybody else? Feel like raising your hand? Welcome. Feel free to check with any of the board members or any one of us with questions you might have about what we're doing here and why we're doing it and how we do it. But we're really glad to have you. We're going to start out tonight a little bit differently from how we usually start out, and this has come as a suggestion from my new board of directors, that we try to create some experiences where you have more contact with each other and aren't just sitting, receiving, and listening to the lecture. And these are processes that usually feel, in the beginning, a little uncomfortable. We have resistance to them. It's like, oh, I don't want to do that. But once we get through the resistance and step into them, they can be actually quite meaningful. So what I'm going to ask you to do is cast around the room and see someone that you don't know or someone that you know the least, and create a dyad with them. And quite frankly, I would ask us not to move our chairs, go just stand in a corner, stand in the middle of the room, and for a few moments share, because we don't want to mess up these floors. And to share about how it is that you're here, how you found out about Pathwork, what keeps you coming back to Pathwork, what Pathwork means to you. And we're going to give each of you about 5 minutes to share. So step into the discomfort. I know what it feels like. Find somebody, find a partner, someone you who you know least or you don't know. And let's form into dyads, standing dyads. Just kneel around and eyeball somebody that you don't know. Okay, we and the board are working with a new process that we call 1-2-3, and we're going to be using that in the classroom as well. If that was an okay process for you to step into, I'm not asking you how it went, but was it okay for you to look for someone that you didn't know and to engage them in conversation? If it was okay, it's a 1. If it was hard, it's a 2. If it was awful, it was a 3. Okay, now we're just talking about the resistance, not the experience itself. For how many of you was it a 1? Oh my gosh, okay, Okay, it was okay. For how many of you was it a two? It was hard. Good? Good. That's path work is all about honesty, facing where we are, which is the very reason that I'm asking this question. Number three, who was it awful for to have to go find somebody and talk to them? Do we have any threes? Good, Joe. Okay, anybody else? Okay, once you got over that hump and had the opportunity to speak with someone, for some of you, how was it just okay? One. I'm sorry, that was difficult. Excuse me. One. It was really difficult.
What's two and three going to be?
Yeah, what's the scale?
Yeah.
Two is going to be, it was okay. Three was going to be, it was great. Okay, one.
What's one again?
One. One, it was okay. Okay.
One was okay.
Yeah, one was okay. 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 Two was, it was fairly good. Three, it was great. There you go. What do you see there? Does that make any kind of point to you? What's the point? Once we get through our resistance and our anxiety about how am I going to approach somebody, once we get over that hump and make a connection with somebody, it's usually pretty darn good. We're going to be working on this a lot tonight. It's usually pretty good, darn good. Not always, but usually. I've probably told this story here before, but I was so amazed when I had one of my many breaks and was in the grocery line with my broken leg. You're noticing this too, Deb, I'm sure. How many people would come up to me and talk about what happened and how did it happen and how do you feel about it? I thought, they don't give a toot about that. It just gave people an opportunity to connect. You know, like when you're in the park with a dog or a kid, people will come up to you. So, I mean, there's a method to my madness in this approach, which is, we're going to talk later about how much we yearn for, we long to connect, and we're afraid of it, and we resist it. So, you just had an experience when you get over the hump, it's actually okay, and sometimes can be pretty darn good. So the other thing that the board has asked me to do, which I think is a wonderful idea, especially when we so much want to welcome in new people who haven't done pathwork before, is that each month we want to do a little review of pathwork principles, both for those who have been coming for a long time and for those who are brand new, like, what is this? So I want you to pull out paper and pencil. And I want you to write down a statement or two about a pathwork principle that you know and you value, or a pathwork principle or two, you're not limited to one, that has really been very meaningful for you. So this is in the way of reviewing for us and creating an opening for people who might be new tonight. So one or two statements about a pathwork principle that has really been helpful to your life. And you can always pass, by the way. So take about a minute. Someone willing to share their... Yes, Kay?
The daily review has been the most powerful process that I've learned in pathwork, that naming the disharmony, naming the feelings about it, and then connecting it to a childhood feeling of similar nature has released... It's also made me think of things that I hadn't thought of in 60, 70 years.
Wonderful.
And just bring them up, feel them, and release them. It's been extremely powerful.
The daily review is when we sit down each day with our journal, and we look for where was there disharmony, disturbance, upset, and we'll be talking about this a lot tonight. The human tendency is to put it on some other person and how they upset us. In the daily review, we look for what in us got stirred by that disharmony. What is that pain, and how can we track it to either our lower self, which is our defenses that cover our childhood pain, our destructive child, to get to the pain that's underneath. And there's always a childhood pain underneath that. Okay? Another pathwork principle that's been very valuable to you. Betsy.
And that there's not something about me that needs to be fixed because it's broken, but there are things that need to be recognized and moved to a different position so that I can see my higher self, that it's always there. I just need to be able to uncover it so I can see it.
Exactly. And for the new people, the higher self is that part of us that is in total goodness, total joy, wisdom, truth, infinite power, creativity. It lives at the root of our soul. The only problem is that we are separated from it. And this work is all about finding the barriers that separate us from that brilliant, beautiful speck of God that lives inside of us. And it's a wonderful thing when we start knowing that's in there, and I can turn to that for influence, guidance, direction, and help, and comfort, and consolation. Okay? Nancy.
What is the truth?
Yes, what is the truth? Like when we're upset, and we're flailing about, and we're thrown around, and we're disturbed, what is the truth about what's going on? And what if I made up as some story? But what's the truth? Can be very grounding, very comforting. Someone else. These are good. Willie.
Being aware when I'm functioning out of the lower self, acknowledging it and accepting it without beating up on myself.
Without beating up on ourselves. Yeah. The lower self is that part of us that is negative, can be mean, can be cruel, can be revengeful, can be attacking, can be assaulting, greedy, self-centered, and it's a part of all of us. And learning to see it and grant it acceptance so that we then can go to work with it is a very, very powerful principle. Great. Somebody else? Yes, Bart?
The importance of experiencing all of my feelings.
The importance of experiencing all of my feelings, my sadness, my hurt, my fear, my anger, my threat, doesn't matter what it is. If I can experience them rather than shove them underground, disregard them, judge them, then they will actually lead me home to my higher self. They are a way home if we can embrace and accept our feelings. Great? Another one. Done.
Being able to step back and recognize when I'm operating out of self-will, of pride, of fear.
Yes. Like so much of what we do as human beings is motivated by pride, you know, taking things personally, how you're thinking about me, our need for approval, or our wanting control, self-will, or our terror about how we're doing and what people are going to think about us. So when we see that that's operating, then we have some power in relationship to it. That's great. Somebody else. Yes. Veronica.
Unresolved problems come back to haunt us.
Unresolved problems come, they never go away. That is so true. And as a matter of fact, they will, we'll talk about this tonight too, they will actually increase in demand and intensity until we start paying attention to them. Yes?
Self-responsibility.
Self-responsibility. What does that mean to you? Right. Like, other people have huge problems and people might be in gray area and people might be acting like a jerk and an asshole. But if something in us is stirred and troubled, then we have a part in that conflict. That self-responsibility is very powerful. Anything else? Yes, Joe?
The powerful life energy that becomes available by allowing for the lower self.
Which means we have to light our candles. Yes. When we can acknowledge our lower selves, our negativity, our hatefulness, not exile it, but acknowledge it, then the light of our higher self can start to infuse our beings. Yeah. Peg, did you have one?
Yeah, I did. I just all my feelings begin and end with me. Somebody else is not inflicting anything upon me.
Yeah.
I just have to figure out where the origin and what the real feeling is, which is somehow.
Great, we're going to work on that some tonight, too.
Okay.
Yes, anything else? Yes, Billy?
Just stopping, breathing, and asking for guidance.
Billy and I are going to do a skit later about a anxious making, overwhelming day we had today with a number of printed areas, which I'm sure you all by now know about. And we actually are literally going to do a skit later to demonstrate the principles from the lecture. But I just had to allow that energy just like race through my body. My heart was pounding and I was feeling overwhelmed. And then I felt sad. And then I thought, you know, I'm doing the best I can here. Please, I need help. Spirit, be with me. Support me. Guide me. Comfort me. We have a lot on our plate today. I have a lot to handle. And I really had an experience in meditation. Barb, what's the name of the condition that when your body starts involuntarily waving in the...
Continuum movement.
And I knew that when that happened, I was out of my ego, out of my head, and in my core being. And I thought, there's my help, you know. So anyway, we'll talk about more of that later. Anything else? Yes, Betsy. Yes, that we all share them in common. And the mistake was when we assumed that it was only we and we kept it to ourselves. And what a relief when we started putting it out there and found that everybody experiences that. Yeah, yeah. Yes?
Another one? The meditation process of letting go of thoughts, just breathing, letting go of thoughts, and how it translates into everyday life when you get a thought in your head and rather than hang on to it, attach to it, you realize it's not a thought I really want to be dealing with and you let it go.
Yeah, you make a choice about where you want to invest your energy. I don't want to invest it there. Yeah, great. Yes? Oh my gosh, you all are good.
I'm consciously acting out stuff that you haven't dealt with in the past and just realizing that it's there.
Right, if we haven't dealt with it, and that hasn't been deliberate, it's going to keep appearing at our door.
And you're not always conscious?
Right. No, we're not. Beautiful. Okay, so we're going to do something else we usually don't do, which is I'm going to have you do an exercise to bring you into consciousness so that you can be on the edge of your own spiritual and psychological seat as we do this work tonight. What I want you to do is pull out your journal. And I want you to begin making a list of what you consider to be your immaturities. Those places in you that you are ashamed of, or you have rejected, or you disapprove of them, you hold them against yourself, you hide them from others. And by the way, this is a private process. I will not later say stand up and share this or share it with another person. Of course, if there's anything that you get present to that you want to share, you're welcome to. I just want you to feel free to really go for it. Now, the one piece of coaching that I have is, rather than saying, let me see, I'm fat and I hate myself, I want you to see if you can release that judgment and say that in an accurate and objective way from your conscious ego. I eat more than my body can metabolize, and I weigh more than my natural weight, and I weigh more than I want to weigh. Rather than saying, I'm a bitch and I hate that about myself, say, when I feel threatened, when I feel the need for control, I get angry and I start taking over. You see what I'm saying? Rather than just a flat judgment that has no truth to it and no life, list as many immaturities as you can, but in a non-judgmental, accurate way. And we're going to play some music to soothe you in this process. So, if I can see.
Thank you.
So that's only for your consciousness for the evening, that you can be present to those immaturities and unformed and broken places as we do the work that we do tonight. There's a quote on my desk in my meditation room and in my office, which reads, "The greatest pain is the estrangement from one's true self." And I would add that the second greatest pain is our estrangement from each other and from others. We might appear, we might act like we're okay with ourselves and others. We might appear cool, that all is well. But all of us know the pain that we carry inside about who we are, the uncertainty that we feel, the broken places that we suffer. And we all pretty privately carry the pain of how hard it can be to be with others. The guide in this lecture does a wonderful job of actually giving us the anatomy, the structure for this pain that we live with, from the estrangement from ourselves and the estrangement from each other. He explicates it so that we can see it and that we can own it and take responsibility for it and hopefully transform it. In pathwork, we study largely the condition of being human, like Betsy was saying, that we all share in common and that no one is spared. We don't know that until we start coming to places like this and program where people are open and other transformational experiences. We feel isolated and very alone in our pain until we have the opportunity to find out that we all pretty much suffer the same things. So when we study the condition of being human from the pathwork perspective, we're not doing it with any kind of judgment, with any kind of blame. We're doing it with discernment. Because what we are aiming for is to transform this condition of being human that we all share in common. Because at this point in our history, it's become imperative that we do. That we work with our limitations, because we live in a world where we're all connected, and we live in a world where we could self-destruct if we don't find a way to resolve our differences and get along. So let's start with the first matter that the guide talks about, which is the estrangement from our own individual selves, and like how that happens. What do we mean by an estrangement from ourselves? In every one of us, there are aspects, parts that are mature and they're developed and they're in truth and they're strong. And these are the parts that really influence our feelings and our thoughts and our behaviors in a positive way. And they're the parts that actually are at the source of what works in our lives. Many things work and many things don't work. But it's these mature aspects that are, the guide calls them, in truth, that has those parts of our lives work that work beautifully. However, there are also equally parts in our lives that are immature, distorted, they're not in truth, and they are in error We think they're truth. And these parts also influence our feelings and our behavior, our attitudes. And we manifest from these parts as well. The things in our lives that are not working, that we can't seem to get a dynamism going, a movement going, there's a stuckedness, manifest from these places where we are in error. They're immature and they're young parts. And what the guide says about these parts is that the greatest problem is not that we have them and that we need to fix them, but rather that we reject them. We disapprove of them. We send them underground. We exile them. We actually try to have other people think that who we are the mature parts, and we hide the immature parts. We don't want people to know that we have them, and herein lies the mask. But deep down, we know that it is not accurate. We know that we have both the positive and we have the negative. And so we are a house that is in conflict, a house that is divided. And we are at war with ourselves because the parts of ourselves that are immature and in error get set aside, get exiled and rejected. What's important to know about this, we think we're accomplishing something when we do this. We've hidden, we're getting by, we're getting over, we've hidden it behind the mask. I see Julie sitting there shaking her head no. What results from the fact that we have sent these parts underground is that our soul, our psyche, our personalities are disturbed, anxious, upset, and in a state of personal disharmony. We could actually say that a lot of the disharmony that we feel in ourselves comes from the conflict that those immature, not yet grown-up parts of ourselves have been rejected, have been sent away, have been displaced. So again, the guide says that the problem is not so much that we have these immature parts, but that we try to rid ourselves of them. And so our job is to bring them back into consciousness, to honestly see them, to own them, to be able to tell the truth about them, to embrace them, to accept them, and to allow them so that they don't have the power to disturb, upset, frighten, and depress us. So that's part number one. Are there comments or questions about that? That's the essential point of the lecture, and we'll continue to build on it. Does it make sense? Are you with me on this? So in order to be in unity, we don't have to have everything about us fixed. Even if we got those things fixed, guess what? The next load is there to come in. You get that fixed, then the next load is to come in. So the point of unity and self-harmony is what?
Just acceptance and understanding that you have these things. And maybe even try to understand why you have these things.
Exactly. Like, what's it about? Yeah. To be able to sit with them, visit with them, bring them home. These parts belong to me. They're mine. They're not yours. They're mine. And they are parts of me that are helpless, that are needing something from me. They're needing my help, my attention, my support, my guidance. The same kind of guidance and attention that we would extend to somebody else who had a broken part and was hurting. We've never learned how to turn around and give that to ourselves. So this is the path to self-unity, is the path of trying to pull up and bring back into consciousness the parts that we have sent underground. And the guide, he makes some pretty bold statements in this lecture about, to the extent we keep these parts separated, set aside, sent away, to that extent, we're miserable and unhappy. And to the extent that we can bring them in, welcome them in, own them, share them as an important part of who we are, to that extent, we have harmony and peace in our lives. That's pretty stunning to me. Is that stunning to you? That it could be that simple? I mean, again, what we think is, oh, I have to fix this. Oh, I have to lose weight. Oh, I have to get smarter. Oh, I have to get a better job. Oh, I have to get, we think that there are things that have to be fixed in order for us to be fulfilled and happy. What is the guide saying? What's the point that I just made? If it's not about fixing ourselves, what is it about? Right, accepting that which is immature and young and needs our help in growing up. So that same principle of unity that we are aiming for ourselves operates in our relationship with others. To the extent that we have not achieved that unity with ourselves, and we haven't. To that extent, we can't have unity in our relationships. And this is how it happens. If you have rejected a part of you in yourself, and that part is triggered in a relationship, do you think you can be open and transparent about that part? No. If you can't be open with yourself about it, how are you going to be open with someone else about it? And so we have a trick. What we do is whitewash it by what? Projecting it onto others, paying attention to other people's immaturities, distinguishing them, noting them, focusing on them, spending our time there. And the thing that makes this so difficult is that others have a whole bag load of stuff too, So it's so easy to say, yeah, because it's accurate. But the problem is, that is a path down which there ain't no cheese. And we do it, and we do it, and we do it, and we do it, and it never works. Can anybody give me one example of when it worked? Ever. It never works. What does work is when someone else's very real problems hook our conflicts. And what do we mean by conflicts? Remember the introduction.
Immature parts.
That
we have not seen in ourselves. That we keep underground.
And?
We're suffering.
Almost true, that's good. A minus. Exactly. We've sent it underground. We disapprove of it. We reject it. We can't stand that we have it. And so when we're in a relationship with someone else whose stuff we feel like we can't stand, what's happening? It's triggering that stuff that we sent underground, that we're trying to happen. I mean, that we're trying to cover up for. Now, unfortunately, the other person is doing the same thing. You know? And so it's like we have two children fighting. Because imagine, I mean, I appreciate that these are the immature parts. So, what was that, Katrina?
That's what's going on in Congress.
All right, let me tell you what the guide says about this. Okay, it's going on in Congress. You know, first of all, it's kind of counterintuitive to think that the path home to unity and wholeness and light is to admit to our mistakes and our faults and our brokenness. I mean, we're completely structured to think that the way home is to do the reverse. Is there anybody who's been conditioned otherwise? What do we think the best thing to do is?
To win?
To hide our stuff.
Show our strong parts.
Yes, show our strong parts and point everybody else's weak parts out. Yeah. I wanted to tell you what the guide said about that, if I can find it. Because it was a great line. I can't find it. I'll probably come to it later. But basically, the guide is saying that it really is one of the most destructive human practices. Not just in our intimate relationships with our partners, with our friends, between parents and children, but, you know, between groups and between countries and between politicians. I mean, it is just a frustrating, destructive, but very common human pattern. And the guide says that the payoff that we get from that negative pleasure of making someone else wrong as a way of whitewashing how we are right is so disproportionate to the pain that it causes, the destructiveness that it causes in our relationships, in our groups, and right now we see it operating in our country. It almost makes my skin crawl when I watch all of these debates and hearings about where we're going and where we're heading. In our government. But that's what they're doing. Blame, 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 blame. No one is really owning responsibility for where I might have been in error. I may have needed to have thought differently about this. It's all finger pointing and blame. And what's the feeling that you have when you're in the presence of that?
Frustration.
Yes.
Fury. Anger.
Frustration, fury, anger. Right, and that's what we feel in our relationships when that same pattern is operating. We feel frustrated. Yes, Judy.
And I also think we have a certain wonderful sense of righteousness.
Yes.
That we know that, you know, I'm right. There's a certain good feeling about thinking that you know. I mean, it doesn't last long.
It's very temporary.
I think it is.
Yes, there is a temporary gratification. The guide calls that negative pleasure, but that it's very short-lived, and that the problems that fall out of that are long-lived and very painful. Because what happens is that we're losing our ability to be connected and in contact and really working with other people. And the thing that we most long for is to be in connection. So the guy, did you raise your hand, Marlene?
Yes, I did. So it just sort of sounds pretty codependent to me. Or if you are codependent, it just seems like that would be like this big spiral. You know what I mean? No.
I do.
Okay.
I do. I know exactly what you mean. And the guide talks about when we take responsibility for what our negative part is in the interaction, we actually become empowered. And then we know how to take care of ourselves and our relationships. We know how to deal with the problems that our partner is posing, or our boss is posing, or our friend is posing, because we are not a divided house. We are in unity with ourselves. So we know when to stand up. We know when to give in. We know when to confront, because we are not using our blaming of the other person as a way of hiding from something in ourselves that needs to be faced and owned and worked with. That is a unifying and empowering experience. And we won't be codependent from that place. So does that make sense?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Any other questions about it? Yes, Denny.
I know that you just explained this 5 times, but I need to hear it again. So what is that division that we experience?
What's the question?
What is the division?
Okay, yes. I'm glad you say, because you know, I think a lot of these pathwork principles, and it's the reason that the guide goes over them again and again for many different ways. They're really hard to kind of get and let in because they're so different from everything that we've ever learned, even in psychology, you know? Okay, so the principle is this. We are a divided house. We are in conflict inside of ourselves because those things that we don't like about ourselves, we have exiled. We've rejected, we disapprove of them, we hold them against ourselves. Sometimes we don't even know what they are. They're so heinous to us. We sent them so far away. And therefore, we are not in unity with ourselves when somebody else's stuff comes at us. Does that make sense? And I'm really glad you asked that question because it's very important. Oh, we have a wonderful example. Billy?
You ready?
I'm ready.
Now, we didn't do much rehearsing on this because it happens to be true. Can I get your chair
up?
Don't drag.
Where are we going?
Let's go
outside
with him.
So it was frustrating for me that you know, you approved it and then it went out wrong. By the way, man, I say it on the website everywhere, that same image, I don't know, like. And yeah. By the way, this really isn't so much a skit, I have to tell you, like, this is my precious, it's like, I'm totally in the incident, she's in the incident, we're not, like, playing. This is just us.
Well, really what I agreed to, what I requested that it is that anything that is of a pathwork nature come across my desk for approval so that I can make sure that we are in alignment with pathwork principles and perspectives. You know that I'm teaching tonight. I'm teaching at the TP weekend. I'm teaching on the August 23rd, Saturday.
November.
Saturday workshop. I mean, I don't think I never signed on to be an editor and to pick up on those kinds of details.
Well, can I just say that, you know, we talked about getting this done really quickly, and you gave it to me on, like, Thursday, and then I gave you something on Friday, and then you said, let me get right back to you, and you get back to me on Monday, so we have this compressed time frame, so I'm sort of, like, doing this, like, rush job.
Billy, I was at a retreat, and I fucking worked the whole weekend on this flyer at the retreat. Because you were so on me about it.
Okay, this is the pretend part.
Right. Well, you know, I was definitely taking
responsibility.
I take 50% responsibility.
I appreciate your responsibility, your leadership, your talent, and you know, but you expect a lot. What can you say?
Well, you know, it's just bad work. No, I'm kidding. So, what do you want to do?
I don't think this conversation is really.
I'm not.
I don't feel like we've reached any kind of understanding.
I definitely do not feel. I felt lighter before we added.
pressured and have a lot on my plate, I can lose focus.
and I lost focus. And I'm fully responsible for that. And I'm really sorry that I blamed you. I'm totally responsible for my abuse. Oh, I wanted you to know that.
Mm, thank you.
You're welcome.
So I wanted to share something and really owe and what happened. it's true, your job is to be responsible for content, and you know, I need to be responsible for the quality of not just how the thing looks, but that it reads properly. And you know, it's odd. It's not like proofreading. How many words are on that flyer? Like 40? It's not like proofreading would have taken. I also have an ADD thing, by the way, and also was smarter than I gave myself credit for growing up. And it was a rush job, but that doesn't mean I can't take 5 minutes to look at the thing critically and carefully and make sure that every word is correct and double check things. And I know you're busy, I know we're both busy, but how much time are we talking about? So I really apologize for all three newsletters and not catching that we didn't have the time in the first two. Particularly after we did have the time in the first and not have the time in the one, the non-meditation, and having the meditation in this one, not having the meditation. So, you know, what I see, and that's, you know, I cut corners a lot. And I don't like being responsible for things being accurate. I have a story that I don't like that. And it doesn't serve me. And I can see in my job and in everything I do, even in communicating with Joanne, you know, rather than say the first thing, you know, just really have a little patience before I communicate and have a little patience before I send you the newsletter to say, yeah, breathe for a minute and then take the time and we would never have had this problem in the first place. So I apologize for, you know, wrangling you into my not incompetence. Well, maybe it's incompetence, but you know, I have this whole thing that I don't want to look incompetent. I didn't want to say my incompetence. It sounds horrible, but my carelessness. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. And I think that's good advice for both of us to stop and breathe and take the 5 minutes to. We don't have any trouble focusing on the appeal, the turn of a phrase, the substance, it's all great. Details we need more consciousness, and I'm willing to work at that in the same way, and I appreciate working with you on that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. So what did you see in that?
Well, first, everybody got upset and started to explain away why it wasn't.
And in the end, you both have the same problem. You both have this experience with, you know, not as much attention. You know, it takes time to focus, and you were under a lot of pressure. And Bill felt the same way. So you were seeing and feeling in each other what you didn't like about what you were feeling yourself, about yourself.
Okay. And I asked you.
I was just going to say that I really appreciated the truth of it. The, you know, your willingness to kind of be very open and share exactly what was present for you. It really had a lot of vitality and energy in it that really ran through.
But in the beginning, you were subtly blaming that it had
failed. Oh, that felt terrible.
Yes, Nancy.
What I saw in the beginning was something that, to me, felt so familiar. What I'm involved in with others, what I observe of other people doing, what the Republicans and Democrats are doing in the Congress or Senate or whatever, wherever they're doing that. And then of course, saw the way to resolving in that is for two people of like open-mindedness to be willing to look at what in them triggered them to have that initial reaction. I just have a question, given my own situation, is what do you do when it's not both people? Yeah. You see, that's great. You and Billy both involved in all kinds of cool stuff and know-how, and even then can go off on a tangent, but then can come back, stop, breathe, and ask for guidance and all of that. But 99.9% of the people on this planet don't have a clue. And I get so frustrated.
That's the most relevant question of the evening, because there is an answer. And the answer is really the point to this whole lecture, that it doesn't matter how troubled, off, distorted the other person is. If you are stirred by it, there is a conflict, a disturbance in you that got triggered and is at play. Okay? If you can find that through your journaling, through your meditation, and then go back and own your part, a couple of things can happen. First of all, that relationship with that person, we would say, who's spiritually more immature, we're going to talk about that in just a moment, that relationship will be nurtured a bit by your responsibility. You're modeling something for that other person. They may or may not pick up on it, but it has a power. But most importantly is you are in unity. You have yourself in your own arms. And so it will come to you. What do I need to do? Do I need to confront? Do I need to walk away? Do I need to end this relationship? But you will be in a place of unity. And what you have to get is that the guide says that our unhappiness comes from our own conflicts and nothing else. That's what we have to get. Now, you don't have to buy that, but that's what we're studying. That's the point. Yes, Kim.
That's exactly what I witnessed, because when you were first both at each other, I just felt your frustration. I felt you both being so unhappy, even though there could be some negative pleasure and like, you're wrong. I felt both of your frustration and unhappiness. And when you both just said, you know what, I was wrong, it was like you both just seem to be able to feel more pleasure and relaxed in yourselves. That's what I witnessed.
So are you saying that
in the scenario, the skit that you just did, when you said to Billy your piece, you know, your apology, yes, and what you revealed to him, if the dynamic was such that Billy did not respond to you at all,
which he didn't the first time other than say thank you,
then that would be enough for you, that you might review. So that what you take away from that experience is not, it doesn't matter what the other person's reaction is.
Right. Yes. And what the guide says, if we are making our well-being dependent upon the other person behaving in a certain way, saying a certain thing, then we are still in our conflict, and we will be miserable and unhappy.
Can I just follow up on that? If Billy had said instead of thank you, something to the effect of, well, you better fucking apologize to me, you bitch, you were so wrong. You know what I mean? I mean, I understand the concept of what you're saying, that you have the inner unity with yourself. But really, on a realistic level, how many people here can walk away from that and still not have something? You know what I'm saying? It's just...
Well, what the guide says is that if we are, I'll get to you in a minute, Denny, I can see you're excited about, okay. If we are in unity with ourselves, we will know what to do. We might have to confront something, we might have to walk away. There are a zillion things available once we are not a divided house. Once we have owned our stuff, which, by the way, we rarely do, so we don't even know what we're talking about here.
Okay.
We don't even know how great it would be. You know, and I'm talking about we human beings.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I was sort of getting at.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yes, Denny. Yeah.
Well, I just want to say that I totally know what you're talking about. Not too long ago, I had a situation. Of course, I was asking for situations so that I can grow. You got it. It was really a drag. And so I was in a situation with someone where we then had a conversation about it, and I came to the table like, okay, this is where I was coming from. It was because of this, and blah, blah. And the other person went, oh. And I was so pissed off. I left there. Up until like 15 minutes ago when we did that immaturity piece, I was like, oh, and you know, could have said they were sorry and this, and some, I also went to like some like negative pleasures about, you know, oh, well, you know, all kinds of stuff. And I was so churned up and feeling like, okay, I did my part. And then when we went to this immaturity place, and I came in here tonight, and I was hearing it, like, it, like in a way, like I didn't want to really talk to anyone, you know, because like I was feeling my stuff, and shame, and all this stuff. And then doing the immaturity piece, I was like, I just started crying about that, where I was coming from my own child. And I can tell you, it's so weird, but I actually feel okay. And it seemed, and you know, I always get stuck, I was telling earlier today, like, I get stuck, like, oh, this is so homey. But it works. I'm hardly believe that I feel the way that I feel, because when I walked in here today, I like didn't even want to make eye contact with people, because I was feeling like so stirred up about.
So you were in your own conflict.
Oh, I was totally, that's why.
It has nothing to do with the other person. Oh, you're in your own conflict. That's
absolutely
a beautiful thing to see, yes.
So,
yes, Julie.
When we first started tonight, I met Sheila, and I said, yeah, I really didn't get this lecture. It was really hard for me. I just didn't get it. I don't think I'll get anything out of tonight. When you and Billy first started your skip, I said, what did I start? Because I was one of the ones responding, I want to come, but you said it's Friday.
Oh, you were one of a million.
You were one of a million. So, I created this, right? And you had said you had spoken to your higher power. I'm thinking, what did I do? Sue? Okay, so here comes the skit, and I'm thinking, because I look what I did, and I know that's from my past. I always thought I was to blame for my parents' problems or whatever. I give all that. But what I was feeling was when you were doing that, and it was a lot of what I thought was nervous laughter. You were so deadbeat and serious, and I started thinking, maybe it's time for me to leave. Not really, but it's like that was the feeling, like it was very uncomfortable to watch that dialogue.
Your own deep context.
Yes, exactly. And then you both got up, and then you came back. And you came and you spoke your truth, you spoke from your heart, and I felt it physically. Mm. You could hear a pin drop in this room. Mm-hmm. My heart just swelled up. Not that it was good and comfortable, but it was real. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, oh, I can listen to this, and I was just really calming down. And then all of a sudden, you got up. And I'm waiting for Billy to say something. And in my head, I immediately went, Billy! And then I did it. Because it's like, you said what you needed to say. And that was enough, and that's where I would want to be. Whether the other person is in their drama, we can't control that. I so get that now.
Yes.
Because if I'm happy that I said what I needed to say, whether you accept it or not, is none of my business.
Mm-hmm. I am fulfilled by my own unit, regardless of what you do.
So I thank you.
You're welcome.
But I think that, like, the point she was making before, too, I think the normal reaction that most people have is that if you're open enough to say, oh, okay, now I realize what I was doing there, and you know, you kind of bare your soul, and then the other person doesn't respond to that, I think the normal thing that most of us would do is react even more strongly than the first time before we bare our soul. And they did something we didn't like, we reacted, because now we're even more vulnerable.
Right.
And so I think what we have to recognize is that when we do our part of it, there's still that part of us that is expecting a certain response, and if we don't get it, we fall right back into the same trap we were in before. You know, so it's so easy to do, like even when you said about how 98% of the people in the world just don't get it, like that's that duality that we fall back into. Like, I know something they don't, we all do that, you know, we all do that thing, it's so easy. But, you know, I mean, it's like you gotta be the Dalai Lama or something. None of us are that person.
Well, that's what we're aiming for.
Right.
But really what we're aiming for, and this is the essential point of the evening, and I do want to make some other points, but the essential point of the evening is that there is a power within us to be tapped, and I'm talking about something very different from our higher power or our higher selves. I'm talking about the power of being in truth with ourselves and our willingness to dare to risk that in relationship, so that love can flow. How many other people felt what Julie felt when Billy and I got open with each other? Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, I'm sure many of us have had the experience that when someone has owned their stuff and is being beautifully open with us, our heart just blows open because we're in the presence of love. No defense, we're in the presence of love. But the truth is, when we are in relationships with other people, our stuff is going to get stirred all the time. All the time. And so it takes a lot of work with journaling and daily review and prayer and meditation to find out what's my part here. And if we are unwilling to do that or we don't know to do that, then what happens is that we tend to isolate. Because it's hard to be with people and we don't want our stuff stirred. But then another whole host of problems arrive when we isolate. Because we're made to be with each other. We are made to be connected and to be in contact. So when we withdraw into isolation, what happens is a huge longing starts to form in us, and heartbreak and pain, because we want to be with others. But it's too hard to be with others because they stir our stuff. So we retreat to being isolated, but we're in acute longing and heartbreak because we want to be with others. So the solution to both the unbearable pain of isolation and the unbearable pain of the stuff that comes up in us when we're with others is what?
The other.
What?
Deal.
Deal. What does deal mean?
Allow.
Deal, be self-responsible and open and transparent and own everywhere we can, and to give up the "you did it to me" game. Maybe the person did do it to you, but this is what we have to do. If we are disturbed by what the person did to us, if we're hooked by it, then something in us is hooked that we can bring into unity. Yes, Jo?
Just to, that doesn't mean you have to like it. There's a distinction between dislike and having a response and having a negative experience. And just, it might not be pleasant, that's all, but it doesn't land inside of you.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So taking full responsibility does not necessarily mean that the outcome is this ideal, like, oh, now we're all going to go skipping to the park together.
Yeah.
Right? But you don't have to have a negative reaction.
Have a negative reaction, but you work with that and see what your part is.
After your negative reaction is handled completely, there can still be a piece that is maybe not the ideal outcome.
Right.
Like, you know, people have to separate or to
be. Right, and that would be the next point that the guide makes, is that if you are, I'll get to you now. Yeah, if you are in a relationship where, whether it's a spouse or a partner or a boss or whomever, and you're trying to be spiritually mature, and we have a very specific definition of spiritual maturity, is being present to your stuff, being transparent about it, and being willing to own it again and again in a relationship. And your partner is not at that place of maturity, that they're able to see and they're able to own, and they're still into the blame game and the right and wrong game, rather than seeing how you both are participating in what's going on. And you do your work, and you do your work, and you do your work, and that doesn't nurture the other person enough that they start to take responsibility for their disturbance and the destructiveness that it's causing in your relationship. Then the guide says that those ties may need to be severed. But you don't sever them, and that the person who is more spiritually responsible, and all that means is more able to be honest with themselves and transparent in the relationship, has more responsibility for the relationship than the other person does, and is the one who has to make the decision to sever the tie if it is a destructive relationship. But when you leave that kind of relationship after having done this work, again, you're not leaving in spite, you're not leaving in punishment, you're leaving because it doesn't work, and you're leaving for reasons of growth, and so that you can find a more mutually satisfying relationship. So does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Any questions about that? There is nothing in life that is any more beautiful than when we take the risk of laying ourselves bare, just as we are, to another person. It is a moment of true intimacy. Love flows, our hearts and souls tremble. In a relationship where both parties lay bare their difficulties and their immaturities to each other, love and beauty is potentiated beyond words. This is a moment of great power, and love is reached, which resounds throughout the universe, transforming everything that it touches. So that's what's available. That's what we have to start stepping into and considering and exploring and practicing a little bit at a time and a little bit at a time.
What page is that on?
Don't know where that is. That's my page 22.
Oh. Never mind.
I want to give you one more piece before we work with your impurities and immaturities that you wrote down earlier. The guide says if you want an overall measure of your fulfillment in life, you can look at these factors. What is the depth of relatedness and intimate contact that you have with others? What is the strength of feelings that you allow yourself? The anger, the hurt, the sadness, the fear, the lovingness, the caringness, and joy. And what is your willingness to give and receive? This is intimate contact. Where would you rate yourself in these categories? The depth of relatedness, the strength of your feelings, and your willingness to give and receive. Marlene, yes. Marlene and then.
Going past that, I was going to say something about your little skit there.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. When you were doing the blaming, I kind of got really defensive. And realizing how damaging that is for a relationship. And that's how my marriages were. And no wonder they didn't work.
Right. Well, what the guide says is that in intimate relationships that start out lively and connected, and there is eros and love, will eventually become dead if we do not live up these principles of intimate contact, of being transparent and open and real with each other.
It just felt very hurtful.
Yeah.
Listening to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, Judy.
But I think even even in the defensiveness, when you were both being defensive, you were being real.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't holding back. You weren't withholding feelings. You were honoring each other enough to be very raw and real. Now, you didn't come from a higher, it took a while to come from your higher self. But I think lots of times people, and I'll speak for myself, it takes a lot of courage for me to come, at that kind of point of conflict. And I think lots of times people hold back and aren't real, in those moments. So
I'm losing my voice here, so I'm pulling the mic again. I think that's another really good point, Judy. And what I want to say about that is that it is all right if it gets messy and conflictual and we play the blame game, because that's what we do. But then we want to be able to catch ourselves and go back and create that moment of intimacy by saying, I was in error. I was wrong. I was blaming you rather than talking with you about my part in this conflict, So we have to let the mess happen. But the power is in our going back and the courage in cleaning it up and taking responsibility. Yes?
Dumb question is going to show a lot about me, but do you have to resolve it with that person? Can't you just go home and write about it? Not you.
Well, I think it definitely starts with the writing about it and coming to one's own truth and getting really clear and coming into unity, which means, you know, resolving your own conflict with yourself, accepting that part of you that is immature and young and broken, and extending love to it. And then you can give it to the other person, and it doesn't really matter what the other person does. You are healed by that moment. Yes, Denny?
Is it ever unwise, like if someone is abusive or someone has...
Yes, that would be unwise.
Mm-hmm. Be unwise?
Yes. And the question you would have to ask yourself is, what am I doing in an abusive situation where I can't be open and honest? Yeah. Yes, Billy.
Well, I think Marlene had a good point that the mess is the gift.
The you mess know, is the
when
gift.
When Julie kicked this whole thing off by sending us that email that we started.
I wanted to go really bad or to come by yourself.
And you and I had, you know, if we don't have the mess, we don't get to...
Have the intimacy.
And we don't get to have the intimacy.
Yes, exactly right. And that's why we need each other. And it's why we need to be in relationship, because our stuff gets stirred. It's why we run from relationships, but it's why relationships are our gift. And without relationships, we're not going to be shown ourselves. Our stuff is not going to get triggered so that we can then grow. Yes, Pam.
There's a lot of situations in life where you can't afford to be real. You know, say you were my, I've had this same experience with a boss at work, where this person, it was, she just told me, I am not responsible for the money.
I have news for you. I'm going to interrupt you. I'm going to interrupt you because we have to move on, because I want to do a meditation before we end. I cannot believe it's 10 to 9.
We started.
Yes, we did. But what you are underestimating is the power of achieving your own unity. That's what I want you to take from tonight. If you are in unity, you can say whatever you want to say. You can't be hurt.
But you can be hurt. No, but what I mean is, if you're talking to your boss, you're not going to say, well, you fucking idiot, you know? Or use foul language. I mean, you can't be that real in your anger.
We're not recommending.
It's kind of like you have to go in your office and write a vent or something.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. But I thought you meant I can't be honest and open with my boss.
No.
You can be honest and open anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're certainly not going to have a fight with your boss. Yes, anything else? Yes, Alicia.
In my experience, I can get to the place of owning my stuff on some level, because I think there's many levels of owning your stuff. So I think in my experience, when I look at the other person's reaction, I get to a place where I own my stuff, and then I feel good about owning my stuff. But I don't think it stops there, at least for me. There is what I've found is there's a sensitivity that I have about the impact that I have on somebody else that I think is an important factor in this dynamic. And when I get it, when I can feel impact that I've had on my husband, for example, own my stuff and feel the ramifications of that, that's a piece for me that really seems to just move it a little more, especially on his part. And I haven't always done that. I can get to the place where I can own my stuff as much as I'm possible, as much as I'm capable of doing, but when I can really feel the impact, it changes it even more.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I agree with you. I think we do have. I think once we're in unity, that is a big piece. But I think there's also something about seeing our unity and the impact that that's had.
Mm-hmm.
If we really experience our unity, then we experience the hurt we've caused somebody else.
Yes, absolutely.
And when we feel that unity, for me, what I've noticed, especially with my husband, when I can get that piece, he really starts acting differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Thank you for that. Anything else? Okay, so we're going to close with a meditation. We need song number 3.
I need 3 before.
Yeah, 3. Uh-huh. So before you start the music, Joe, hang on for just a minute. I want you to take a look at the list of immaturities that you wrote about earlier. And wherever you are with them is fine. It's where you are. They're not to be judged. See these as interior parts that are helpless and they're needing help from you and from your conscious ego. And does everyone remember what conscious ego is? Let me describe it really quickly. Conscious ego is that mature part of us that is always in truth and objective. It's always compassionate. And it's never judgmental. And we want to extend that kind, helpful attention to these broken, immature parts in ourselves so that we can start taking some steps toward unity. And you can have some practice on what it means to actually start working toward unity. So Joe's going to play the music and I'm going to lead you through a meditation as you reflect upon these immaturities and it's number three. So read over your list, drink it in. These are your impurities, your immaturities, some of your broken places that need you and that need help from you. Can you honestly face what some of your negative attitudes toward these immaturities are? Let yourself know them and say them to yourself. You're awful. I'm ashamed of you. I wish you didn't exist. Whatever your words are. And let yourself feel the pain of your own judgment towards some places in you that need you and need your help and your kindness and your guidance. Imagine what a new attitude toward these immature places would sound like. I accept you. You're mine. You're my helpless places that need me. I'm going to bring you home to me. I'm going to hold you in my heart. I'm going to give you cherishing, helpful attention, just like a child. You are my unformed, undeveloped, broken places that need me, no one else, that need my help, my attention, my love, and my guidance. You're mine. I will bring you home to me. How does it feel to claim these parts? To wrap your arms around them? To hold them close? Does it feel comforting? Does it feel encouraging? Does it feel hopeful? Does it show you that something else might be possible? That nothing needs to be sent away and exiled and thrown away. All needs to be brought home into your own loving heart. Amen.